the Mills Fleet Farm Studios. WTDX Lakeville, WRXP Cambridge, WTVZ Eden Prairie. A Cumulus station. We're live.
Live!
From the Twin Cities with the Bob Sansevier Show. Great guests, interviews, and over 30 years of sports insight.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Here's the host of the show, Bob Sansevier.
Well, I think play with the puck. When we're in the offensive zone, playing with the puck, it makes it a lot easier to play defense because you don't have to play it all the time. It comes down your end, you play hard, you get it out, and then you go on the offense. So for us, I think just puck possession, get back to playing a puck possession type game in the offensive zone. I was talking to someone this morning, and he was saying it was almost like we just switched, switched teams the last two games. That happens. That's what happens in a seven-game series, and now we have to get it back, get that momentum back.
A very calm and analytical Ryan Suter talking about the big game. You can't even talk. It's enormous. The enormity of the game tonight. They go down 3-2. What did I say the other day? The team that takes the lead here wins in six?
Yeah.
I'm still sticking with that because I just think it'll be a big punch out. If you're St. Louis after the way you played the other night, imagine if they had another performance like that tonight. The Wild would be sent reeling.
That's just gross to think about.
Well, people want to, and I understand why. It's one game, and it's one loss, yes, but it's the way they lost that, to me, is more alarming. That Dubnyk gave up, he gave up six goals. Now, yes, you could talk about the Tarasenko goal. Oh, that was a tough one. But six goals.
Mm-hmm.
He's been impregnable for most of the time since he's been here, for the most part. But to give up six. Well, we'll find out tonight, and probably very early, of where his mind is and how they're going to play. Their defense has got to step up again. I mean, they had the great road, 12 in a row on the road. Then they lost in St. Louis when neither team seemed to care a great deal.
Yeah,
particularly the Wild, because they knew they had that first wild card spot. But when they show up tonight, I think we'll know a lot in the first 5 minutes of how it's going to go, based on how they're performing and acting.
Yeah, if you see the Wild get trapped in their own zone the way they were often and early in game four, you can start panicking.
Yes.
Maybe get some sweat beads going.
Get the sweat beads. Or maybe start working the rosary beads, one or the other. Tom Reed, by the way, will join us at 2:15. We're going to talk hockey with him. We're going to talk hockey with Pete Wagner about half an hour later. And we're going to talk some hockey with Jim Suhan, who is in St. Louis. He left yesterday, got there. Tom is there. For all I know, Pete is driving there. I talked to him in his car earlier. Didn't ask if he was heading south down 35W to get to St. Louis. 651-989-9105 is our number. 651-989-9105 if you would like to weigh in and tell us what score you see. And by the way, for everyone listening now, you want to call us. We can do about 342, 343 or so. We're going to have a little trivia contest. We have another four-pack of Comic-Con tickets next weekend. And Hellboy's all excited. He looks like he might get to go.
Almost made it.
Almost made it.
I'm not going to almost make it. I'm going.
All right. Well, that's if we don't have, production for you to do or some business here that needs to be taken care of.
I'll quit.
Just for Comic-Con.
I'm done.
What are you wearing?
Clothes.
No. What are you wearing? You got to. Everybody dresses up. Serious Comic-Conites. Dress up. You got to dress up.
I'll wear a 105 The Ticket shirt. Run around.
You look like a stooge, not a comic. No, that's not true. You look like a good young man.
I normally look like a stooge anyway, so I don't have to try too hard for
Will
that.
Will you wear a mask?
Are you asking me?
You have to wear a mask, right?
Put makeup on?
Well, no, is a Comic-Con all about wearing some sort of a mask and then your little outfit?
Well, a lot of people do dress up and...
You went there last year.
Yeah.
What was the costume you saw most? Was there like a theme costume? Star Trek, is that still big, Star Trek, at these Comic-Con things?
Yeah, I believe William Shatner was actually there last year.
Oh.
He drew a lot of people. A
lot of Trekkies? But
I think I saw a lot of Bane from Batman, that whole costume.
Oh, that
with the
deal.
Mask
yeah.
And all that.
They talk like that too?
Oh, Batman.
Yours is better than mine. Oh, Batman. Batman, see? I sound like Edward G. Robinson.
Batman.
Yeah, we're done with you, Batman, see? You and your gang. But anyway, all right, so you're not going to wear the whole outfit, the whole getup.
We'll see what I can pull off by next Saturday.
See what
Saturday.
You can pull together?
Yeah.
All right. One thing, we are going to talk a ton of Wild today, and as I said, if you want to weigh in now, have at the phone lines, but Before we do that, we'll talk to Tom Reed in a few minutes. This is something that I've been saying and about Jameis Winston, who still is the presumed overall number one overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
An NFL executive told to Bob McGinn from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who's got respect as a writer. He's been doing it for a long time. With Jameis Winston, I see Jamarcus Russell. And that is exactly what I think, too. Because you got a guy that, yes, there's talent there. There's no question Jameis Winston has talent. Much like there was no question Jamarcus Russell had talent on the field. It's all the off-the-field stuff and the issues he's had that has to give you pause. And I go just to last year, Johnny Manziel, who doesn't have the talent that Winston had. However, the off-the-field stuff never changed. He partied throughout the offseason and didn't stop. And then he wound up doing a rehab stint. He just got out, last week?
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, it was an unnamed executive, that usually is, told McGinn with Jameis Winston, I see Jamarcus Russell, and said, isn't that interesting? I see the body. I see the lack of focus. I see the same coach and system. That's a great point, by the way, because Jimbo Fisher was Russell's coach, too, at LSU. Only Winston's not as good an athlete, and his arm isn't as strong as Jamarcus. We're looking at another guy that's a product of the system and has tremendous athletes around him. Ooh, shot. Well, let me ask you this, though. This unnamed NFL executive, we don't know what team it is, but how could these other teams not see this, too, if this is indeed true?
Well, I think a lot of teams see it, but a lot of teams don't have to worry about it because they're not going to be in the position to be drafting Winston because he's going to be the first quarterback
taken,
most likely.
Yeah. Well, you know what, actually, if I had the first overall pick, and obviously I don't, but you're looking at the first overall pick belongs to, right now, they could trade it, but right now it belongs to Tampa Bay. If you're Tampa Bay and people rave about Leonard Williams, the defensive tackle, why don't you take him and then come back in the second round and take the kid coming out of Southern Cal, the quarterback that they have? Barkley?
Oh, you mean UCLA? Hundley?
Oh, excuse me. I'm thinking wrong. Yeah, wrong team, wrong decade. Yes, Hundley. Why not take, or whoever you
Hundley
think.
Hundley or the Baylor guy that his mind is.
Whoever you
Baylor
think
guy.
Is the next best quarterback, because Mariota will be there. You know what? One of those two may wind up sliding. I think Mariota, he's not going to slide.
Or hey, maybe even take Leonard Williams first. You have the first pick in the second
round. That's what I'm saying. Take
move
a quarterback.
Move back into the first round if
to
Mariota
get one of,
does
oh,
slip.
Oh, if he does slide. Yeah, because you have something to work with.
It happens quite frequently, especially to quarterbacks. If they slip down into the 20s, it wouldn't be a bad move for Tampa.
If Tampa lets him go, you may see Winston slipping. I'm not convinced. I think this all could be a smokescreen by these teams, too. I have a hard time believing that, especially, you know, Lovie Smith, the coach there, he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the kind of taskmaster that you need for a player like Winston, and my Johnny Manziel, too. You need a coach who's going to keep these guys in line. And I don't know that Lovie is that type of guy. I mean, Leslie Frazier, same type of coach. Leslie was just a really good guy to be a coach. And it seems like Zimmer seems like more of a taskmaster than Leslie was here. But I'd hate to have him, you know, he winds up there and he just gets away with anything he wants. But some of these guys, it doesn't matter how tough you are, some of them are just not going to, you know, they're not going to listen to it. Like Manziel, he didn't care what his coaches thought or said. They didn't want him out every weekend in the off season and partying on weekends during the season. But he did it. And I just don't see Winston changing.
Well, going back to that comparison, Winston to Russell, I think that is an easy comparison to make. But when you look at Russell, he had zero work ethic, and he just tried to gun the ball everywhere. You've seen Winston make a multitude of different styles of throwing, making the right throws at the right time, and his ability to not want to lose was outstanding. They were down in so many games this year, and he'd make a comeback.
But did Russell show that before he was drafted? This whole lazy thing you're talking about. Because, again, the most interesting thing about the two of them is that they both played for Jimbo Fisher. And he might have, his system could have been protecting these guys. Now, they both had great, I mean, they're both very, you know, very athletic and have skills and arms. You know, they could throw, Winston can move a little bit, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to, you know, he's not a guy that's going to make things happen as a running quarterback.
No, not typically.
No. But I mean, and in terms of size, I mean, Russell's a lot bigger. He was 6'6", 265. Jameis Winston is 6'4", 230. And Fisher was, you know, he coached Winston at Florida State. He was the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator when Russell was at LSU. So he worked with him intimately. You know, both of these guys have worked with Fisher intimately, and he may He may have just designed his offense to hide whatever flaws these guys have. But you know what? I don't even think the flaws are what happens on the field. It's off the field that would concern me. That's what this guy, this NFL executive, was talking about. I mean, the numbers they had actually were fairly similar in terms of what they did in games. And I would not be drafting him. Not if with the first overall pick. That's a guy you take a flyer with if you're in the mid to 20s.
Well, if they do take him, that's a pick that might get somebody's career kind of made as a GM or fired
or
in
destroyed.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting about it, this story surfaced a few weeks ago. The owner, Malcolm Glazer, had been the owner of the team. And he owns, like, Man United, the most expensive team in the world, the soccer team. Mm-hmm. Except he's dead. And his daughter is running the team. And the story was she's not crazy about this pick. Because she wants to have somebody who's not going to be, you don't have to worry about the public relations nightmare that Jameis Winston could create. And it's a lot different when you're in with an NFL team. A lot of these guys, I mean, in college, these guys do get protected by the schools and by others too, and sometimes by authorities because they don't want, you know, they want to protect the college.
Yeah.
And at the NFL level, it doesn't happen that way as much. Especially Tampa. The cops care about that. That team's been in a slide since Brad Johnson was their Super Bowl quarterback. So they certainly have struggled for quite some time. Now, I'm looking at NFL.com has, they've got a mock draft. They have four guys. Daniel Jeremiah, Charles Davis, Charlie Casserly, who's been a GM in the league, and Lance Zierlein. Across the board, Jameis Winston. Every one of them has him taking Winston. And across the board, except this Casserly has Tennessee taking Leonard Williams, but they have Mariota going second. Let's drop down to the local club.
It's like a shot-for-shot remake of CBSSports.com, because that's what I'm looking
at. That's what you'll... Okay,
four guys, and they have the exact same thing. Right. One guy has Leonard Williams going to Tennessee. The other three have Marcus Mariota.
All right, then tell me this. Three of the four with Jacksonville have Dante Fowler.
Yep.
Going, and the only other Lance Zierlein has Williams going. So in that one, Fowler's going third.
Yep.
Most of them. And then fourth, Leonard Williams, Amari Cooper, Kevin White. Starts to break a little bit here, Cooper. Do you see what the Washington Redskins are doing, by the way?
Yeah.
$1 million?
They should pay more than that because it's impossible.
It almost is because even these draft experts never get all 32. They don't get all 32 of who goes in the first round. In this, Daniel Snyder, the owner of the Redskins, it's easy money for him, or it's just publicity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get all, it doesn't have to be this team, but in the slot, all 32 in order, 1 through 32, the way they fall. You're right. That's virtually impossible.
Yeah, all it takes is one team thinking, my guy might not be here at 15, so I'm going to trade up and get him now.
You need to have...
So
you actually
screws everything up.
You would need a time machine to go forward and look at what the results were the next day in the paper you travel to see in the time machine. Because there's no other way to do it. People will sign up. I wonder how he's making money off of it. Daniel Snyder's a little, you know...
Mr. Dumbass.
Yeah, him. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to be joined by Tom Reed from the Wild Broadcast Team and Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. You want to stop there? Head over now. They're ready for hockey over there. We'll be right back with Tom Reed.
The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We are joined by Tom Reed from the Wild Broadcast Team and Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. Now, Tom, do you think you have to talk some Wild fans off the ledge after the other night's game, or is everything going to be okay?
You know, I think I'm sure I'll have to do that, Robert. But at the same time, I think everything'll be fine. The start of tonight's game is going to be critical. The other night, Minnesota did not start very well, and as Mike Yost said, it progressively got worse from that point on. So that doesn't say much about the team the other night. They just had a bad game. I mean, sorry, between the pipes and the guys ahead of them didn't do much either. So hopefully that will be a different scenario for this team.
Tom, did you see any signs of Dubnyk maybe after all the games he played being a little tired or sore or something on the other night? Or do you just think, again, it's just a bad game all around?
It's just a bad game all around. Now, you can bounce back from that. Everyone's been in that position, whether you're a goaltender, a defenseman, or a forward. You know, you come into a situation where you played really, really well, things are going great, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you just have a bad day at the office. And so it transcends into sometimes the rest of your cohorts, and that's what happened the other night. Just right from the drop of the puck, I mean, the St. Louis Blues did a good job of containing things early on. They got a quick goal by a guy who doesn't score a lot of goals, that being Reeves. He got the first goal of the game, and all of a sudden, they couldn't get their speed up again. They didn't have that speed that we normally saw in the previous games.
Do you think, Tom, that they got a little too cozy or overconfident after the way they played the game before? And that's a little alarming if that happened.
Well, yeah, it would be alarming. I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, they knew what they had to do in order to win that game, and they were terrific in game three. They were as good as I've seen them all year long. Everything they did, they executed properly. Yep. I mean, coming out of their own zone, the shots they had on net and so on, but boy, they got into game four, and it was a turnaround and a couple lines, different combinations by Ken Hitchcock, the coach of St. Louis Blues, kind of turned things around just a little bit. But I think it was just the overall makeup of the team the other night. They just didn't seem to have that jump from the start. And if you don't have them, because that first shift really kind of sets the tone of how your team is going to be.
Tom, how do you completely shut down Tarasenko in the first and third games, and then he scores five goals in the other two?
Well, I think you have to do is lock him in the dressing room. I mean, that's the only way you're going to shut him down.
Well, that's how they shut you down, right?
Yeah, this guy's a talent. You know, I was talking to Kelly Chase this morning at practice, and he was telling me that Tarasenko, about a year or so ago, went on the ice. Brent Hull was doing a commercial shooting pucks.
Yep.
And he wanted to go on the ice, and he didn't care about being part of the commercial. He just wanted to shoot pucks with Brent Hull. And he went on the ice, and he took numerous shots. He was taking shots from different sides. And he said the one thing he noticed was that every shot that Brett took hit the net. And he wasn't. And finally, Brett said to him, you know what? If you're going to shoot, you've got to hit the net. You can't be wide of the net. You can't be going for the top shelf. You've got to shoot the puck in practice like you would in a game. Even if the door is going to close in the morning practice, if that's where you're going to shoot the angle from at night, then that's what you have to do. And he said that made the world of difference to him.
Because really?
He said out of 150 shots that Brett Hull took, he said that Hull missed the net one time. That was it.
Wow.
He said if you don't get the shot on net, you're not going to score a goal in most cases. So obviously he took it to heart, and that's what he's done. I guess the biggest rub against Tarasenko, if there is one, is that he looks more to make the pass first rather than take the shot, and they want him to start shooting more. I mean, here's a guy who's got five goals on just eight shots that he has taken. And in the first game, he had no shots in six attempts. He had no shots in game three, but boy, he sort of made up for it in the other two games.
Yeah, he sure did. I mean, I hadn't realized it was 5-8. That's staggering.
Well, 62.5%. I mean, you look at the course, and they keep stats like that all season long, but if you're around, 16, 17, 18%, that's pretty good. But to be 62.5% success rate, wow, that's phenomenal.
Well, who is the guy that would be best to shadow him?
Oh, boy, I don't know if one person can shadow him because he's all over the ice. It's not like, we had Holla last year shadowing McKinnon against Colorado. But you have to have that speed. But when you do that, all of a sudden you open up other avenues. And if you try and put two guys against him, the other guy in his line is Schwartz, who I really like. I think he's a terrific hockey player. In fact, he was actually picked up by the St. Louis Blues in that first round back in 2014. And he's one of those guys that really can make a difference with this club. But if you shadow Tarasenko, you leave Schwartz wide open. And here's another guy that knows how to put the puck in the net. He had 28 goals on the year and 35 assists. So all of a sudden you leave yourself wide open.
Now, you mentioned Hollow. Will we see him tonight?
No, we won't. The only change they're going to make is Matt Cook will go in place of Sean Bergenheim on that fourth line.
Okay. Were you surprised by that? Did you think maybe that Hallow would get a chance to get even more speed in there?
No, I don't. I wasn't surprised by it. I feel Eric's a terrific kid, and he had a tough year. He got hurt early in the year. He got a little upper body injury. I think it was a head injury. And I don't think he's ever been quite the same. He was so good last year for Minnesota. And sometimes it takes a long time for those types of injuries to just completely go away. I don't think he's been 100%. He may tell you he is, but just by watching him on the ice, I don't think that he's really had the the same stamina he had last year in the playoffs. And I think that injury took it away. Hopefully over the summertime he'll be able to regroup a little bit and recoup that magic that he had last year.
Tom, as you mentioned that, I'm trying to think of an athlete who's ever told me he wasn't 100%.
Oh, yeah.
These guys are all 100%, especially in the playoffs. At least they tell you that.
Yeah, guys want to play. I mean, there's no question they want to play. It's not fun sitting up on top and watching. You want to be a part of the action.
So this is not a situation where he's in Yo's doghouse then. It's just you think it's the lingering head injury?
Well, I don't know that to be true. That would have to come from the medical side of things, the coaching side. But that's my own personal opinion. I could be way off base, but I don't think I am. But at the same time, I don't think he's in the doghouse at all. I think they understand. They had problems, and every player goes through it at some stage. You hope it's going to be short lived. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. And I look for Eric to bounce back next year.
Now, I put a lot of stock in this. Maybe I'm overstating it, but were they loose when you saw them today?
Yeah, they seem to be. I mean, there's some tension. There's no question. They have to win. It was so good when they won a game down here out of the first two. That was terrific because they had to do that. Now they have to come back here and they have to do it again. But they won a game during the regular season in this building. They won a game in the playoffs in this building. So they've got three games to go. And hopefully if they win this one tonight, that will ease things up a little bit and make it a little more relaxed. But even if they win tonight, it's, as you know, two games to go. It could become a very, very tough final two games.
Now, Tom, what are you hearing about Sunday's game? They haven't set the time yet. Do you think it'll be a night game, a late night game, afternoon game?
No. Well, if the Rangers win tonight, the consensus is if the Rangers win tonight, then that eliminates their opposition. And that, with that being said, then Minnesota will probably go to that 2:00 start on Sunday. If the Rangers don't win, then Minnesota will have probably either a 6 or 7 o'clock start, I would think, on Sunday evening. It won't be an 8:30. These 8:30 starts are not much fun, believe me.
No, they're not.
Not for anybody. Certainly not for the players and the coaching staff, and certainly not for the broadcasters. I mean, we won't get back in the city state till 2:30 in the morning. And boy, that's tough. These late nights are really tough, especially in the playoff time.
You know who it's good for, though, Tom? The Hockey City Pubs.
Yes, it is. We like that.
I bet you too.
We should have hopefully a good night tonight.
Oh, I would think they're starting to pile in there already. A lot of people knocking off early, going over to Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub, and just getting themselves, getting a nice meal and maybe getting a little, having a good libation.
Well, they got to get there now because it's 6 hours before the game starts, so you better hurry up and get a chair.
You know what? Because they do fill up quick. Even though there's always room for one, you don't always get it. You may have to have standing room only.
Always room for one more.
I love that. I love that. Now, what now, Tom? I know the walleye is great, but what are you recommending on a Friday night? I mean, is there a special tonight?
Well, no. I mean, our special.
It's always special.
Everything is special down there. But you know what is really? If you haven't tried the ribs, the smoked ribs are really good. They have a rib sampler that is so good. If you're not looking for a big meal, you get a half rack or a full rack, but they have a rib sampler. You get four pieces with that, and that's very good also. And the one thing that people really like is the steak salad. Well, we cut our own pieces of steak, sirloin steak, and put it in there, and it's very, very good. So it's a little bit lighter, but the meat is just terrific.
Here's what I've never asked you. When Tom Reed goes into Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub, is there a go-to that you always get? Do you have a pregame meal you always have, or do you have what do you eat there? The walleye, what's your favorite?
Yeah, the walleye is normally what I would like to I eat because it's fairly light. It's got the rice peel off with it, which I enjoy rather than the French fries or the tater tots all the time. So it's a little bit lighter, but we've won awards with that, and so I would certainly recommend that going in there.
Well, and again, like you can't go wrong with any. And I'm a big fan, as I've mentioned to you, about your cheese curds. But, I mean, you have so much. I put it on anything. I'd put it on the walleye, as a matter of fact, because they're so darn good. Hey, Tom, I may see you at your place on Sunday.
Wonderful.
So I may come out there, because actually the 105 The Ticket is giving away a pair of suite tickets at at the pub before the game on Sunday.
Great. We're looking forward to it. I'll be there bright and early.
I'll have to get there, too, just to find a place to park. Tom, have a great – I know you'll have a great game tonight announcing Tom Reed from the Wild Broadcast team and Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. If you haven't gone yet, steer your car in that direction over to Tom Reed's today. Well, tomorrow and Sunday. You can never get enough of Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. How's that for a plug?
If you do it one more time, I'll really like it.
There is nothing like Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. It's the best pub you'll ever find for food, friendly conversation, and great libation.
Perfect.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Take care. All right, well, I really like talking to Tom. He's a good guy. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, little threesome, three questions, three answers. We'll have them. You can join in, too, 651-989-9105. I know they're going to want to join in for the trivia contest that leads to Comic-Con tickets. A four-pack of tickets to Comic-Con. And, they have a high dollar value. Those things are like getting Mayweather-Pacquiao tickets. That's how pricey those are.
Pretty close.
Pretty darn close. All right. We'll be right back with Little Threesome.
Magic number, yeah it is.
No way!
Magic number, somewhere in that ancient mystic trinity.
You know, you'll get now that Phil Hughes is the ace, he's going to have a miserable record. Because he's going against Felix tonight. He's facing the aces of the other teams. He has the hope.
He does not have it easy at all.
No. What he has the hope is, I don't know if you've been following Chris Tillman from Baltimore.
Yeah.
Good game, horrible game. Good game, horrible game. He alternates every game. He had a horrible one the other night. So his next one will be a good one. When they play Baltimore, they have to hope he matches up with him on one of the horrible days.
You know, if you're going good game, horrible game, that's the kind of consistency the Twins starting staff kind of needs.
Because usually it's horrible, horrible.
A few horrible games in a row, and then maybe one good game.
Yeah, they can get that. But, tonight he's got... Well, Felix, David Price the other night... You know, one of the best pitchers in baseball with Detroit. He was knocked out in two and a third innings and gave up seven earned runs. So even the aces could get knocked around.
Yeah.
So maybe Felix is going to get knocked around, but the poor guy he's just getting all. And he's not just getting aces. He's getting some of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, he's going against they call him the king. It's King Felix.
Yeah, King Felix. Well, and he opened the season against Price, right? Yeah. When he had a pretty darn good game.
I can't remember if he faced Sale against the White Sox.
I don't remember how they, if he did, if he got, you know, he might have, because obviously they did. Here, wait a minute. I actually could, the first, all right, how many, let's see, they played three with Chicago. So he would have pitched on Saturday again, right? If he pitched Monday, four games, it would have been the fifth game.
Well, he would have pitched
it would have been the sixth game.
Sunday.
So that would have been Sunday's game. All right. They didn't move him up, did they?
Don't think they did. They just... slid Trevor May or Pelfrey right into the rotation to cover Nolasco.
All right, so I'm going to go to the... This certainly would be a Chris Sale score, 6-2. Although, I don't think he's allowing two runs. My God, that's a horrible outing for him.
Ouch.
Did we talk... What was it we were talking about Hughes, that they should save him? Is that what it was? I don't remember. But I'll know in a second here. Chris Sale's in return against the Twins... But did he? He beat Hughes.
Zach is telling us it was Hughes.
No, he did. He beat Hughes. So okay, now that's pretty. Yeah. So he's faced Price, Sale, and this is his fourth start now.
Yeah.
Okay. So who did you face? We can figure that out easily enough. We're gonna get to this threesome, but now I'm curious about this. Price, Sale. Okay, you're talking about
He face Kluber? I can't remember because he may have faced Kluber
as
well.
Okay, wait a minute. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that would have been Sunday again, right? That would have been, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Would have been Saturday.
He would have pitched on Saturday because that was the game we lost 4-2.
Yeah, 4-2. But think about that. Kluber, if he pitched against Kluber, he's probably faced the fourth best starting pitchers in the American League.
He's facing
certainly faced three of the four.
Chris Sale almost won a Cy Young last year.
Danny Salazar. And he lost 0-3. Yeah, and he had 10 Ks in the win.
And Salazar throws about 100 miles an hour, so good against those power pitches.
He didn't get Kluber, but...
He's consolation prize.
Yeah, he must make me number two. I don't want to be the ace anymore. Boy, that's too bad for him. All right, we have a little threesome of questions. What's the first one?
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
I have three questions for you.
Yeah.
Number one, the Pelicans lost to the Warriors after leading by 20 in the fourth quarter. Is that one of the greatest collapses you've ever seen?
Certainly, it's one of the greatest collapses I've ever seen in the fourth quarter. And that was not it's not a good way to go. You like that Golden State team?
They're a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's what I.
Team that can
thought.
Shoot the lights out. Curry and Thompson are amazing.
I got an. I got to be honest with you. I don't think any team called the Pelicans should ever have a shot at winning an NBA title.
But they have Anthony Davis.
I don't really care.
He's going to be considered the best player in the NBA if he isn't already.
Okay, they're
very
called,
shortly.
They got to change the name. They're the Pelicans.
How about
we'll the Pelicans? Be, it's a terrible
we'll
name.
We'll change our hockey team to the Minnesota Pelicans. They could be the New Orleans Wild.
Well, maybe they can work on that. There's something to that, perhaps. By the way, I just took a quick look here. Phil Hughes, I knew his ERA was bad, but he's at 5.30. Yikes. Well, you know what? Even though you're facing aces, how about keeping the score down for the guys you're pitching against?
Yeah, it's not like you're facing the best batter
no.
every single time.
You
want your team to score runs, but at the same time, you have to limit the other team.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough year for Philly. All right, what do you got, number two?
Number two, Tony Romo said the Cowboys will win a Super Bowl next year. Where do you rank the Cowboys on the list of favorites?
I would say, and by the way, our guest a little bit later, Ruth Lorden, RuthLorden.com, at Psychic Ruth, she predicted they would win. No, it wasn't her. It was Vince Lombardi and her, I believe, both said the Cowboys would win. If they get Adrian Peterson, I think they will. Because I think they will be offensively potentially unstoppable. Because with that offensive line blowing open holes for Adrian Peterson and Romo with Dez Bryant, and what he, you know, Bryant, imagine that. Bryant and AP. And Romo handing off and throwing the ball. Romo still can throw.
Yeah. Jason Witten can still run a route.
Yeah.
He's not the same.
And it doesn't matter who the other receiver is. I mean, but they're going to have a decent guy there. The point is, you have AP running the ball for you. If they are crazy if they don't make that deal work. And I know it's a short-term thing. Maybe they get a year or two out of them. But right now, you're not going to have Romo much longer either if you're the Cowboys. Now's the time you need to go after. You need to do what George Allen did when he had Washington, the over-the-hill gang, when he didn't care about young guys. He got all veterans, guys that had played for him and other guys that had been veterans around the league. We're talking guys in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he made a Super Bowl run with that. Didn't win, but he made a run. You know, he wanted that type of team. And that's really where the Cowboys should be. They should look at it and say, we could win a Super Bowl this year. And then you hope you can keep things going and get some momentum for you. But I think if they don't get AP, I would say no. If they get AP, I'd say yes.
I hope it's no.
I'm not going to argue with Vince.
I wouldn't mind trading AP, but I don't like to see the Cowboys successful.
Well, you know, okay, here's the thing you have to do. But there's already a trend. Every time the Cowboys or the Vikings are involved in a trade that involves a running back, the Cowboys use that as a launching pad to a Super Bowl.
To a dynasty.
A dynasty. That Herschel Walker trade made that team.
Yeah, there's a little bit kind of referencing that in the next Sports Flash.
There is? Yeah. Well, I can't wait for that.
Herschel Walker said some things.
Oh, yeah, well, Herschel... Chris Thomason, who is terrific. He and Master, I love talking to those guys. Master Tesfatsian from the Star Tribune, Chris Thomason from the Pioneer Press. But why should anyone really care what Herschel Walker has to say?
You shouldn't. It's just funny.
The best line I ever had about him was when he was on the, you know, he decided he wanted to be an Olympic bobsledder. And I had written, and it got repeated a lot because it was just a gem, that bobsledding would be the right sport for him because it involves going downhill.
Perfect.
Which was what his career was doing in football. The Cackler, when is he coming on?
I don't know. I talked to him last night, and he said he's never coming back here ever again.
Seriously, he said that?
No.
A son of a buh said that?
Mr. Dumbass.
Why does he just call in? Hey, Schreier, if you're listening, call in right now, 651-989-9105. You don't call in, that means you better have a good excuse and you're busy. All right, what's the other question?
And finally, all the games have been decided by more than one goal. Will tonight be the first game decided by one?
No. You know why it's no? Because there's always an empty netter if it's close. Or there's a 6-1 blowout.
Or a 3-0 blowout.
Or three,
air quotes. I don't know. I don't know if I want to call that a blowout after six to one.
And I don't know if the air quotes work when you're on the radio.
That's why I said it out loud.
Air quotes. All right. I don't think it's going to be a one-goal game. Because it doesn't always seem like there's an... Every time they've been an empty net, hasn't there been an empty net goal?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's more likely to happen than not. So the answer would be no.
But you just kind of think that aren't they due for possibly a smash mouth overtime game or something that it comes down to just one?
Well, if it's overtime, I was thinking more regulation. I guess it could happen in overtime because then you don't have the empty net. Although, unless you're a real daring coach. I don't think
Patrick Waugh is anywhere near the series.
Or a dope.
He'd do it.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. When we return, we will speak with Pete Wagner from On the Ice. His show runs every Saturday morning. Also followed up by On Deck Radio. Gene Larkin and Al Newman with Pete after On the Ice. So we're going to talk a little ice with Pete when we return.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show. Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We are joined. Who is this?
Is this Rush?
It's for Pete.
Yep.
All right. Let it play a little so he can hear it. That's enough. We are joined by Pete Wagner from On the Ice. Saturday mornings followed by, after On the Ice, you get On Deck Radio with Pete Wagner, Al Newman, and Gene Larkin, an all-star lineup. And Pete, he gave you some Rush because he knows you like Rush.
And he went deep in the library right off their original self-titled Rush album. How great is that?
Now, anything greater,
man.
The only thing greater is if he'd play some Frankie Valli for me, like I've been asking for a year. So,
I love it. I think he's doing it just to get you going now, Bob. I think it's pretty obvious.
I think that's very obvious. Cocky little thing. But, well, Pete, so we talked to Tom Reed earlier. He just said bad game. You know, you get it's one game. There are games where you're losing a bad one. I don't know. This was alarming to get blown out like that. Am I overreacting saying it's alarming? That it's almost like you awoke a sleeping something.
Well, yeah, you know, it's hard to answer, really, I think. I mean, yeah, I've thought this thing through. I watched what I watched. I agree with Tom that it's a bad game. You write it off and you move on to the next. But I also agree with you to lose in the fashion that they lost. There were so many layers to what happened. I think the thing, there's a couple of things that stand out to me in this.
Okay.
And it's Ken Hitchcock in the very beginning when he was saying, you know, give me Gretzky, Lemieux, and Coffey, and we can keep up with these guys. He said it as a joke, but I think he was very serious, saying, you know, basically, we've over-engaged these guys, and Minnesota did out-hit this St. Louis team 26-16. The Blues only took, I believe, two minor penalties for 4 minutes in the entire contest. In the past, they had taken, 20, 30 minutes worth of penalties, undisciplined, absolutely idiotic stuff. They over-engaged in the forecheck, got buried deep in the wild zone. We don't mind that as a defensive core here in Minnesota because the puck has moved quickly. What happened is they backed off of that just enough to really take away where Minnesota was hurting them the most, which was the first pass out of the zone and then through center ice where, you know, you can recall 3-on-2s and nifty drop passes, backdoor chances, all kinds of things that were there in games 1-3. Not at all in game number 4, and they effectively shut it down. What Ken Hitchcock then said was, but leading into that game, we know who they are, we know what they do, and they haven't changed a thing since January, and why should they have? It's worked. They've been the hottest team in the NHL. He changed things subtly in a little bit. He did. And the result was Minnesota, when they played the puck deep, there were more men back for St. Louis. Their defensemen now had options to get it out because in the past, three games, they had players buried deep in our zone, and they didn't have options out of the zone. Therefore, Minnesota could go to work. So that there was two things going on there. The other thing was they were able to get behind the Minnesota defense. That Tarasenko deflection to the top shelf was gorgeous. The Reeves goal was absolutely a screenshot. Say what you will about the 5-hole goal. While it looked bad, there's no reason why a National Hockey League player should have the opportunity to blast away from the faceoff dot. He can pick a corner. He picked the 5-hole, and he did his job. So you can't hang it on Dubnyk, really. I mean, that Tarasenko breakaway goal, gorgeous. So there's more to it. There's more to it, in my opinion, that meets the eye from that. So tonight's going to be very interesting to see how Minnesota comes out to play. Hitchcock said they're not going to change. And I thought that was a direct challenge to the coaching staff to change the way they play because he wants them to.
Well, if they don't change, though, they're going to get their ass kicked again. Well, Yo, what, how do you think Yo should counter this?
They have to slow down. As crazy as that may sound, I think they need to pull back a little bit.
Uh-huh.
They got to incremental. Two things they can do is just get more incremental on the game, and yes, they're going to have to chip and chase. They're not going to be able to play the puck possession game they're going to want to, but they're just going to have to back off a little bit in the offensive zone, much like the Blues did to them, and turn it into a game that's played from the top of the Blues circles to the top of the Minnesota circles. Jake Allen's been unbelievable in goal for the St. Louis Blues. He's been outstanding. And Devin Dubnyk's been great for Minnesota through the entire season. Let's take a goaltending battle. I'd take Dubnyk at this stage of the game, but I think you got to get muddy and get really gritty playoff hockey. And the run and gun isn't going to work the way we've seen it. I don't think if St. Louis executes and do what they did in Minnesota on game four, that's what they got to change. I would just slow it way down. That would be my take.
Now, what about adding Cook is going to help slow it down a little bit?
It'll get it more physical. I mean, you know,
and make it more physical.
Yep. Thing, I don't think it's a personnel issue. You can put him in for Bergenheim or whoever it's going to be.
It is Bergenheim.
You can put him in for that. And really, Bob, I don't think that's going to make that much of a difference. I think it really overall, if the Blues play the way they did on Sunday, there's no way Minnesota wins this series. If Minnesota can counteract that and get the puck out of the zone and get their numbers and create some trouble through the neutral zone, but they'll have to be a little more incremental in their approach, I think they can do it. But I don't know. It's going to be tough. Every time I say I think they're going to win, they lose. And every time I think they're going to lose, they win. So I guess I'll say I think they're going to lose.
Well, I mean, if you're right, if St. Louis does come out like that, because they, if it was a loss, you know, by a goal or two, well, it was just a game. It was a bad game. This was just a thrashing. You know, that's what would alarm me if I'm Mike Yo, that, you know, you have to counter a thrashing.
You can't panic. I mean, we know that much, and this team won't. And the one thing that they've done all across the board for the Wild has been to respond when their backs have been against the wall and the pressure's on them. Don't believe a word of Mike Yo saying the pressure's on the St. Louis Blues. They're right where they want to be. They, you know, not that home ice matters. It doesn't. I think it's more of a psychological thing just to as a talking point. But they did recapture what they, you know, really perceived to have lost in the first two games. So they came to Minnesota and got back what was, yep, in their opinion, theirs. And so now it comes a three-game series. You can't panic. You have to go out and do your job. And I do think the pressure's on Minnesota. It's on both teams. You don't want to lose this game and be down 3-2 because now you got to win two straight.
Now, I asked Tom this, and we talked about it yesterday. Did you see any signs the other night of Dubnyk being, maybe all the games he's played, he is tired? Or, you know, maybe he was sore because he didn't seem, you know, Hellboy pointed out, he didn't seem as, to move the way he had in the other games.
Well, so a lot of talk about that over the past day or two here, and I'm not ready to say that yet. I need to see more from him. It's been the first real tough situation he's had, but again, the Tarasenko breakaway, tough to defend there on his part. The Reeves goal was a full-fledged screen with traffic. The Tarasenko deflection up top shelf was great. The five-hole goal, while it looked bad, there's no reason that shot should be taken, and regardless, you're a sitting duck as a goaltender. The only goal that was suspect was the one that went in off his elbow after he had gotten hurt, and yes, Bob, that could have been some of it, but at that stage of the game, I just think as a goaltender, you're back in the crease a little bit. You're not scored to the puck. You're not eating it up to the midsection like you should. And I just think, it was time to pull him. But I agreed with Mike Yo, too, as well. You know, you pull him after three goals, you're saying you're our guy, and he's been his guy. And so what are you going to do? You're going to turn it over to a guy that's played once since January?
Well,
that's not, you know, you can't really do that. So at that point, it didn't really matter.
No, and Pete, you know what? And I said throughout the end, toward the end of the regular season, leave him in, let him play, because you need to get into the postseason. And then basically, you hope that he's rejuvenated by that. So I think they did the right thing by playing him as much as they did, because they needed. I mean, it wasn't until the last week that you knew they're going to make it in, and then they wind up getting the first wild card. I have no problem with playing him as much as they did, but maybe they're paying a little bit of a price. And you're right. It could have been when he got hurt there in the second period that might have affected him too, because at that point, was he hurt before or after the fourth goal? I'm trying to remember.
I think it was after. I think goal number 5 and 6 occurred
after the injury.
Yeah, took that one. But, you know, goaltenders get dinged all the time, and it's just like being a catcher. Kurt Suzuki, we've seen him go through a ton of things, including the on-deck circle. And you just get back in there and you do your job. It's what you have to do. I think this team was completely overwhelmed in their defensive zone by a Blues team that played the way they wanted to. It was really interesting to me. After the game, the Blues said, that's exactly how we play, how we want to play. What an effort. And Minnesota came back and said, man, that was just a clunker, our worst game ever. We were just bad. We weren't good. And, you know, I didn't see a lack of effort by the Minnesota Wild at all. So, I mean, if you get into the effort talk, I just don't buy that. I just felt as though St. Louis changed enough of their forechecking scheme to make a difference on how Minnesota got out of the zone, got the energy through center, and then attacked the St. Louis zone. It wasn't the same. It wasn't for sale, and it wasn't there. So now the onus is on the Wild to say, okay, we got to break it down into 3 segments, out of the zone to the center ice. If we get it deep, we have to have more numbers than they do getting in there, so they don't have options. So it's going to be muddy. I say it's a 2-1 hockey game tonight.
Well, there's your one goal game that Hellboy was asking about.
Yay!
He's wanted a close one. Now, Pete, tell us what people can hear tomorrow on the Ice, followed by On Deck Radio with Al Newman and Gene Larkin. And you go on the air at 9, is that correct?
Correct, from 9 to 11 with hockey.
And then
David Helmer pushing the trigger back behind the board, doing a great job. We're going to have writers in from around the country that are covering various series, including Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's great to have him on board because then we get their perspective from their locker room a little bit more in depth that way. We'll hear from the Washington Post. We'll be all over the place with guys tomorrow. So it'll be all about the Wild and the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then our on-deck radio show, George Stamets from the St. Paul Saints is going to join us. And we're going to have Matt Fiedler, the Gophers pitcher and outfielder, checking in with us, tell us about his season. We got tons of talking points to talk about. We'll catch up on the Twin Series in Seattle. And we'll also take a look at some of the injury woes that have bitten the team in the minor leagues as well. And we'll go up and down the baseball scene there as well. So 2 great shows, a lot of fun.
Now, Pete, with all the stuff you mentioned, baseball, you doing a 7-hour show tomorrow? Because that's a lot to cram into an hour.
Well, you know what? We make him talk like the FedEx guy.
Okay, that works. Pete Wagner.
Well, what it does is it keeps Al and Gene on task.
Oh, that's probably a chore, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah. Well, you do a hell of a job. You're a wrangler. Pete Wagner, Pete the Wangler Wagner. That's a tongue twister. All right, Pete, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
All right, take care. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we will give our D-bag, actually, not of the day. This one could be of a few years. We got a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame on this one today. We'll be right back.